Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to a special episode of Big Screen Sports, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network and presented by Manscaped, where you can get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com using the promo code BIGSCREEN. About a month ago now, ESPN ran a documentary called Koshien, Japan's Field of Dreams, that followed two coaches and their teams as they tried to win Japan's high school baseball championship. A few months ago, we did an episode with the guys over at Tipping Pitches about baseball documentaries we'd like to see, and one of the co-hosts of that show, Alex Baisley, pitched like essentially that exact thing, something just like that. So coming on the show today, I am talking to his co-host, returning to Big Screen Sports. It is Bobby Wagner from the Tipping Pitches podcast. Bobby, thanks so much for returning to this pod.
Well, thanks for having me, Kyle. I'm happy to be here. This is a really amazing doc. It kind of blew me away that I guess 6 weeks after Alex pitched that almost exact documentary, I saw it coming across the PR slate in the old inbox. So I don't know. I'm excited to talk about it. I hope that a lot of people have seen it to this point, but if not, I think it's going to be streaming at some point in August. TBD on where it's actually streaming, but I hope that people have gotten a chance to watch it.
Yeah, when you slid into the old DMs and gave me the heads up that this thing was coming out, and one, it was wild because it, you know, like I said, it was basically what Alex had pitched, and two, it was the exact kind of baseball documentary I think we'd all love to see, especially coming on the heels of what was pretty fair to say a disappointing long gone summer, a very substanceless documentary.
A Wikipedia page doc, if there ever was one.
a home run mixtape, which like sounds, it's more fun to watch on YouTube than it is when you're trying to get something. But Bobby, before we get into our thoughts on the doc, where can they find your pod and your interview with the director of this film?
Yeah, Tipping Pitches, well, wherever you hear your podcast, just go ahead and search. Wherever you hear your podcast, just go ahead and search Tipping Pitches. We release every Monday. Our director with Emma Yamazaki, who's the director, or our interview with Emma Yamazaki, who's the director of Koshien, I think it was about a month ago now, probably.
It was like right when the doc dropped, which is when you and I had talked about doing this episode, and then that just didn't happen.
You and I both forgot about like multiple recording dates for this episode, but that's fine. We're doing our best here in month six or seven of quarantine. So search for Tipping Pitches wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at @tipping_pitches. Emma gave us a lot of her time, and she was really generous with it. And we got to talk about a lot about some of the choices that she made in the documentary. So I think it'll be, if you like the doc, I think it'll be beneficial to go back and listen to that one.
Yeah, I thought it was a really enlightening interview. I really enjoyed it. Hearing her perspective, hearing the, you know, her wanting to tie it into society, like tie the baseball craze into society and what that means. I think it was really the job she did was really effective. And I don't want to keep shitting on Long Gone Summer, but it's so much better. And like it brings so much more to the table than Long Gone Summer. Before we get into like the nitty gritty, just what was when you watched it, what was your initial impressions of the film? Like when credits rolled, what did you think to yourself?
I think the first thing that stuck out to me was that this is made by a filmmaker, like a capital F filmmaker. The look of it, the feel of it, the cinematography, the wide angle shots, like everything about it from the very beginning was like, well, we're not trying to make pop entertainment. We're trying to make almost like cultural ethnography, which as somebody who studied American studies in college, American studies and journalism, this is kind of a perfect intersection of those two things. And I just thought it was so intimate from the very beginning. In the first couple of scenes, the film is following two high school baseball teams in Japan as they make their trek towards the Koshien tournament. And I just thought that to immediately start out so personal and get right in the faces of these young high school baseball players, that was what really stuck out to me in the first place. Just the ability, the obvious filmmaking ability that went into the craft that went into this doc. It was unusual for a sports documentary, even for like really good sports documentaries. You know, you've dumped on Long Gone Summer a couple of times, but even Last Dance, Like the filmmaking was on a different level just because it was much more pristine and much more cinematic.
I thought it felt really authentic. And that's not to say like documentaries inherently are authentic, as long as they're not made with like horrible intentions. But it wasn't set up to be.
Or as long as they're not like, told by the subject in the case of The Last Dance. Yeah,
as long as you're not giving the subject an iPad to comment and meme himself with everything.
There are many versions of authenticity in our society these days, Kyle.
This is true. But it was very much not like a popcorn flick documentary. It was authentic. It was raw. It was right. It was just right there. I'm not articulate enough to go deeper than that, but it was just so authentic and it felt exactly like what this needed to be. It would have felt weird if she took this extremely important cultural event in Japan and just what baseball means to the country and made it very like, and just sugarcoated it a lot. And yeah. I think it was the way she did it was really perfect. So I want to break it down into basically kind of three ways of thinking about this, just kind of like just basically get our thoughts out. Actual baseball, and then the culture, Japanese baseball culture in general, and then I have a couple miscellaneous things that I just want to get out there. Sure. But I need to preface this that I am horrible with traditional American names. And so I have included as few of the players' names as possible, but I did include the Coach Mizutani, mm-hmm. of Yokohama Hayato.
Yes,
he's the main coach. I thought he was a very compelling character as a baseball coach for documentary. He's very intense. He's very dedicated, which I think is very much a part of just Japanese baseball, but he's clearly fair and caring about his players, about his family, about the sport in general. There's a lot of American football similarities with baseball in Japan, like high school American football. And the one, like the stereotype that coach ain't home much definitely is right there with American football.
Yeah. I mean, we actually asked Emma about that moment where she's interviewing Mizutani, his sister and his wife who are running his business, the family business, while he's away coaching high school baseball. And, you know, I asked her, I was like, that it seems like a whole documentary in itself, just the role that women play in terms of keeping the economy going while men are coaching baseball full time and like sleeping away at high schools, you know, coaching baseball like a boarding camp. And
when will my husband return from the diamond?
Yeah, literally. When will my husband return from Koshien? Maybe that should have been the subheader of the film. but no, I think you're right. Mizutani, a really compelling character. And one that I think actually is emblematic of how the rest of the coaches run their show. I mean, obviously there's a spectrum of how strict versus how lax different coaches are in Japan. And you know, and here too. But we asked Emma that, and we said, do you think that this is a good representation of how the rest of the coaches operate in the country? And she was like, I think he's actually on the looser side as opposed to some of the more strict characters that they interviewed. Yeah. I mean, it's obvious, maybe we can get into that right now, but just how regimented the entire operation is there is actually kind of shocking, because you might read about it, you might hear about it, you might know. The one thing that you might know is the pitch counts of the pitchers in the tournament, because Matsuzaka and Kikuchi and Otani, like the things that you hear about these guys before they come over is, well, their elbow might be shredded because they threw 200 pitches on back-to-back-to-back-to-back days in their high school Koshien tournament. And I think that's a really narrow lens into what Japanese baseball is, but that is the one thing that I would say most semi-dedicated American professional baseball fans could tell you about Japanese baseball.
It was absolutely my biggest, like the most notable thing about Japanese, like the thing I knew the most about was just that stigma And they touch on it a little bit in the film about the actual, when they get to the actual tournament, they mention that voiceover about the worry of overuse, the health of pitchers. But they also mention I believe the championship team, or one of the teams that was in the championship, they say that the pitcher had pitched every inning for the team since the initial tournament that gets them into Koshien. You basically ride one pitcher to survive. So that, yeah, that sense of, I guess that sense of duty though, and that sense of putting your team on your shoulder, like it being your duty for your school and your teammates, is still very much alive with Japanese baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is definitely a critical element, a critical lens that you could take on that aspect of it. And you could take a toxic masculinity lens to a lot of the stuff that goes on in the film. But I don't think that that was what Emma was mostly interested in doing in this documentary. I think it was more to try to give it depth and layers to the international audience, especially to the American audience where baseball started, obviously. Because it is nuts. This tournament, we should talk about the tournament itself first, because it's paramount to understanding why the documentary is interesting. The tournament is like the Super Bowl combined with March Madness, combined with like high school state playoffs, combined with the Little League World Series, and then also combined with the regular World Series in terms of crowds and the atmosphere at the actual tournament. It's unlike anything I've ever even considered. It's basically like how I felt playing Little League when we would make it to like states or districts or whatever it's called now. But like,
it's
as
like
if I was actually good.
You think about Texas high school football, but like imagine Texas high school football if everyone in the United States was paying attention to the one like Texas high school football championship game.
Yeah, and playing in a single elimination tournament over the course of 2 weeks, like every team in Texas, you know?
Yeah, well, not to mention the single elimination aspect of Koshien, of the main tournament, but how you get in being a single elimination tournament and I guess like your region or whatever. Like, it is, yeah, a brutal existence that it, and all this training, all the running, tons of meetings, like for what seems like very few games. I will say from the documentary, I'm not sure you get the best grasp of, like, I had trouble kind of grasping time, like what time it is, how many, you know, are they playing other games? They bring in a team for a scrimmage, but then it's like, okay, then they go play their tournament, and then they Mizutani's team has that tragic result. But it's like, are they really just gearing up for just the tournament and that's it? Was that something you have gleaned from this? Like, do you have any idea more than I do?
Yeah, I think they play scrimmages against other teams in their prefecture. I don't think it counts towards anything. But I think
that's
play
crazy. That's like, you know, they go this directly into the playoffs with no regular season.
I think, yeah, I mean, if anything, I think there might be a small, like a short regular season that doesn't count towards anything. But I actually don't know the answer to that. It's an interesting question, because in this current moment in MLB, we're very familiar with the word intra-squad. And it feels like those Japanese high school teams are playing a lot of intra-squads to see who actually makes the team.
Yeah, there's so much pressure geared up towards that. You see the player who's deemed the captain, the seniority member of Mizutani's team, the pressure he's under to, one, be a leader on his team, and two, just to make the A squad. Like, he's not able to eat. It's crazy, and it's all for this one big tournament. I initially want to say that's insane, but it's more, it's just like, it is such a buildup to a single big event, whereas American high school sports, you do get your puff piece regular season, which I think this is something that was much different than what the Japanese baseball players are doing. I think in any American high school sport, you get your, you know, like you take baseball, you take basketball, you get like your 20 games, you get, you know, your non-district games, you get your games that are count in the scorebook, but really don't matter. It's where your bad seniors get innings and take ABs and stuff, and where it's more about, hey, you're all playing, this is great. Whereas it is so, these guys are so geared up for this one important thing. There's no fluff in their season. Really, everything is serious. Everything is stress heading for this one big tournament, which I think is really, really interesting. And it's got to be an incredible amount of pressure to be under at 15, 16, 17 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I think the foundation of that is something that they say pretty early on in the film, in that when baseball came to Japan, there was no such thing as sports. There was only martial arts. And so they thought of baseball and they ideated about baseball in the culture by thinking of it like a martial art. And so I think that explains a lot, that informs a lot of what comes later in the documentary, just in terms of how competitive but respectful it is, how humble a lot of the characters that you see are about the results and about even making the team or not making the team. You know, you alluded to different seniors trying to make the team. And it's like, if you go to high school for 3 years and 360 days a year, all you do is practice baseball and learn fucking algebra, and then you don't make the team by your senior year to play in Koshien.
Baseball is an understatement. You live, eat, breathe, sleep baseball.
Yeah, and you, like, you shave your head for baseball. You have to shave your head. You can't even have like your own creative hairstyle when you're 16, which I know is something that I found very important in my life when I was 16. If you go back and find those old photos of me, I was not willing to shave my head for very much or anything at all when I was 16. But I think that level of pressure is almost unprecedented in terms of like American sports, American youth sports. I don't think that anything really compares to it. You know, throughout Texas football, but like Texas football players go on to play at UT and then they go on to play in the NFL. These kids might not go on to play anywhere. A few of them make it to MPB, but many of them don't. And even fewer of them come over to play in Major League Baseball. And I think that's another element of the doc that's really interesting, in that they actually talk to a lot of the players who are current, a lot of the Japanese players who are currently playing in Major League Baseball, who played in Koshien, about how important it was to them.
You get a Hideki Matsui sighting, which is big. But one of the big differences between this and like American football or American high school sports is, one, like, if you haven't seen this, I think click 30 seconds twice. The scene where he announces the A-team and he doesn't put those seniors on there, including the captain, I believe. It was hard to tell all the guys apart because they shared the same haircut.
No, I think the captain makes it, but the guy who you alluded to, who needed, they told him that he needed to, I don't know his name either, but who they told him he needed to gain weight to make the team because he wasn't big enough to hit well, that guy doesn't make the team. So the dude who was sitting on the sideline, not allowed to even play in the scrimmages, and he was just sitting there eating rice, like, yeah, he doesn't make the squad.
Yeah, and then he gives him, the coach gives him the how can I put you on this team speech, which is like incredible blunt honesty. It would never happen. American high school sports rarely, like, seniors just don't get cut. It's not part of this culture. A lot of times seniors won't play, or they will get, you know, if you know, there will be seniors on an American high school football team that, you know, play for 2 or 3 minutes max all season, but they get their time. They get to be a part of the team. This is very cut and dry, but the difference between this and American football, or even like high school sports, is this, they're very conscious of, this is about preparing you for the rest of your life. Cause like you said, Bobby, there, a lot of these guys are not going to play after high school, and they're very, very upfront about, this is, you know, this is how you prepare for the rest of your life. This is where you learn lessons that are going to carry through, you know, not in sports, but in life. Whereas I think there is very much a lot of stigma about American high school sports that is very true, that like, oh, this is the best time of your life and you need to enjoy this. That is not the case in this, which I think is
I don't know, like, though. I think that they would say that it is. You know, I think if you ask these players, I think they would say that it is.
It's not like the goal of it, though. It's not like they're... Right. They very much talk about bringing this with you for the rest of your life and learning from it, as opposed to thinking back on this as a fond memory, like when you were the starting strong safety for the 4A district champions. It's just a different, kind of a very much different approach. And they don't sugarcoat anything. I think the blunt honesty with the players is really, I think it's really powerful. I think it's something that American sports could really take a look at. Like the whole, you know, not everyone making the team, not everyone getting, you know, to participate in this tournament, that is the biggest thing in the world. These coaches aren't taking all their seniors and then some good younger guys because it's doing right by the seniors. Doing right by the seniors is taking the best team that they've all been inter-squatting with and practicing together and stuff. It is very refreshing to see in a way, but it's also a little unnerving to see how serious it gets in that same regard.
Yeah, I mean, it's sports divorced of social politics, which is something that we don't have at all here. All we have is social politics from the time you're in our sports. I mean, in our lives too, but we don't need to talk about that because this is big screen sports. it's all you see from the time you're seven. It's like, does the kid make the team or does the kid lose the spot because his dad is the coach?
I was going to say, in Japanese baseball, like, there's no way. I mean, I'm making a broad assumption here, but you can't see a scenario where one of these dads goes up to the coach's office and influences the coach to put his kid
at shortstop. No, absolutely not. And even you see in the doc, Mizutani, he sends his son over to the other school in a different prefecture, coached by Sasaki, who's one of the other main characters of the film.
Sasaki, who is just rife with all the success that Mizutani has
wanted his whole life. Yeah,
desperately wants.
But Mizutani sends his son away to play for a different team that could be more competitive and could make him better, as opposed to, you got to feel like if that is that scenario is taking place in America, that kid is going to Mizutani's high school and is getting the red carpet rolled out for him.
Oh, for sure. Well, the thing is, it wasn't just like Mizutani was like, oh, I don't want to favor him. He sends him away. And then I don't think he makes Sasaki's team, but he definitely is like,
no, he does. He makes the team. He hits the cleanup spot.
Yeah, and Mizutani sent that away.
Yeah, it's a level of, I think, humility and doing right by the kids that I think you don't really get here a lot. I mean, that's not to say that you would never see something like that here, but in most instances, I don't think you would.
Big Screen Sports is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Now, Manscaped wants me to push the Lawnmower 3.0, and for good reason. It's an incredible trimmer. I, like many of you, have unfortunately savaged my balls while using inferior trimmers. So the Lawnmower 3.0 is the greatest trimmer ever created. But I want to shout out Manscaped's new underwear. I had Manscaped underwear in the past, and it wasn't quite up to snuff. And I just got some new Manscaped underwear, and it is top tier. It is up there with any sort of other underwear that you have heard advertised on podcasts, and it is at a much cheaper price. I am a huge fan of Manscaped underwear. I just bought myself a couple new pairs just because I was so impressed with it. But between the underwear, the Lawnmower 3.0, Manscaped is just fucking killing it. And I encourage you to use promo code BIGSCREEN at manscaped.com. Get 20% off and free shipping. That's your Lawnmower 3.0, your underwear. You can get a grooming kit on there. 20% off and free shipping with code BIGSCREEN at manscaped.com. Help this pod, and more importantly, help your balls. Big Screen Sports is also brought to you by our presenting sponsor, betonline.ag. Sports are finally coming back. Finally, I watched baseball tonight. That's crazy. Real live baseball. No better place to start betting on baseball, betting on everything else, than our exclusive partner, BetOnline. Get in on the action for, you know, UFC fights, NASCAR, Formula One, Premier League, and again, baseball, folks. Baseball. BetOnline also has daily simulations of Madden, NBA 2K, bunch of stuff to do at BetOnline. Visit betonline.ag, use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Two things about the actual tournament that we saw that I want to touch on. The crowds, you mentioned it earlier, like how crazy the crowds are. It reminded me a lot of baseball in Latin countries, which I've watched a lot of baseball in Mexico and baseball in Venezuela. And those crowds are like incredible. They're rowdy. They're loud the whole game. You got the horns going. These are very intense, loud crowds as well. And like, I realized, like, why does America have the worst crowd standards in the world of baseball? It's awful compared to these, like, these other countries look like great. Like, if you go watch the Mexican Winter League, it looks like a blast every game. And it, in a lot of baseball game, and I get it, it's 162 games in the scorching heat, but a lot of games just feel like you're in a morgue.
I mean, how much time do we have, man?
We got all night, man.
I think it starts in large part because there's a different kind of respectability about American baseball in that we think of it as a national pastime. We think of it as like almost like academic. You know, you have to be the type of fan who knows everything about the history of your team in order to be the true fan. Because baseball has been here since its inception, and baseball is, you know, the very cliche phrase, but here we go, woven into the fabric of American history in a way.
Oh, what a cliche.
I mean, it that's true. However, that doesn't mean it can't be fun. And I think that primarily one of the biggest problems about baseball is that its fans are bad hangs. And maybe that's because like they're older and they want a certain amount of American respectability and humility to come with the sport. But it's so interesting to me in this documentary, if we want to compare Japanese baseball to American baseball, that the players and the coaches' relationship is so strict in that all of the players have to shave their heads. They have to listen to the coaches no matter what. They don't talk back. They stand in a straight line. They line up their helmets on the foul lines before every game. They bow to each other before the game starts and when it ends. They bow to the umpire before the first pitch. All of these things that are very intense and maybe taken through a United States lens might be thought of as regressive. But then you look in the stands and it's unbelievably joyful, which is the opposite of what baseball tends to be here, where like the only version of joy that you see in a crowd at a Major League Baseball game is like sometimes the wave, which I find terrible. And
you
other
didn't see
times,
any waves in this documentary. Notice that the crowd found a way to be really good without the wave.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other version of joy that you see in baseball crowds here is corporatized. It's like Chevy rolls out a Camaro into center field during the seventh inning stretch, and someone has to answer trivia questions for the chance to win tickets to another game, because Lord knows that dude who took the fucking Long Island Railroad in from the South Shore of Long Island probably couldn't afford to bring his family back again this weekend because it's like $150 to get to a game. So I don't know how we got to this point. I really don't, but it's such an interesting contrast between the Japanese crowds versus the crowds that I have experienced here.
You mentioned joy, and that's a word I had written down too. Like there's a lot of serious and intensity in how Japanese baseball is perceived, and a lot of that is, you know, definitely has a base, but even there's joy in the crowds, there's also joy in the players too, and like how they even like how they take care of the field, all the things they have to do for baseball. It's not a misery, like a misery loves company thing with them all doing all their running and having to do all this disciplinary stuff to play baseball. But as far as crowds, I would love, like, you know, whenever we can get crowds back, but, you know, which I'm sure is going to be soon because we're just handling this virus so well. But maybe like Major League Baseball wouldn't go for this and wouldn't like start this. So I would lean towards Minor League Baseball, which is the better of the two entities. get some drums in the stands, get some vuvuzelas, like encourage, like even start promos like loud crowd night. Like,
yeah,
I would love, I mean, again, like even it makes watching baseball on TV better. Like watching Mexican Winter League games is really entertaining. And I don't speak Spanish. I don't know a majority of the players, but it's just really fun when you can feel the energy of the crowd through your TV. So I would love to, make crowds great again. Can we, that would be the preferred great again slogan if we had to go for one. The last like baseball thing, the double steal squeeze walk-off victory just like blew my mind.
Dude,
it's the best thing I've ever seen.
I wrote that down in my notes. The fact like they made a walk-off bunt interesting, more power to them.
Incredible.
Analytics have not found their way to Japanese high school baseball yet. Let me just leave that there.
Incredible shit. This documentary is also low-key a good dad movie, and I had that written down before another podcast did a good pod about dad movies, but you've got a lot of grown men crying in this, which like makes it very much a dad movie. Like you feel the emotion of those old grown men crying. Like Mizutani cries, but you just get a lot of like general citizens watching this game and watching this stuff happen crying, which is incredible shit.
Yeah, I mean, baseball tugs at the heartstrings. It's one of the most crushing emotional games that you can possibly play. I mean, maybe that's my baseball bias speaking, but how random and frustrating and slow and then very fast it can be, I think elicits a lot of emotion. And the documentary captures that really well. I mean, it's hard not to cry when you're playing in a single elimination high school baseball tournament and you get eliminated earlier than you wanted to. Not to spoil anything, but I would cry too. But you're right. It's an inherently dad situation when like only boys are allowed to be near the game. It's like fathers and sons, because these coaches are such father figures for the players, because the players are boarding away at their high school for the most part at the competitive high schools.
The thing that got me in the feels the most was at the end of the film when Mizutani's kind of reflecting on his job. And like, he's another one who is, he's blunt and honest about himself.
He said, I'd prefer to live what do you say, 20th century instead of the 21st century. He said, I wish it never changed centuries.
Yeah. He's very much, he gives himself a very fair self-evaluation, but like, when he reflects about like maybe putting too much pressure on the kids, when he says, I threw a lot of balls at them, but I needed to catch more in return. I felt that. I felt that in my heart.
Dude, the level of metaphor in this movie. I mean, I gushed over it on our pod, but Sasaki, who is the coach of the more competitive high school in the film and who coached Yusei Kikuchi and Shohei Ohtani, when they were in high school, which they went to the same high school, I think 3 years apart or 2 years apart, which is, that's a factory.
essentially the Harvard Westlake of,
yeah,
of
seriously. When he was the scene with him watering his bonsai trees and him talking about the delicate balance between leaving the wiring on the bonsai trees to shape them as they are growing initially when they're young plants, and then trying to find the right time to cut the wires off to let them grow to be larger once they've taken the correct shape. I mean, that is the thesis statement for the film.
That's, and in also many ways, even that more is the dad shit.
Yeah, that is the thesis statement for the entire concept of coaching, of managing, of teaching, of parenting. It's a thesis statement for any type of mentor relationship that you take with something. And I just thought that little stuff makes this documentary a sociocultural statement, a sociocultural document in a way that I feel like most sports documentaries do not get to.
Oh, for sure. Just the emphasis that those two coaches put on, I kind of mentioned earlier, but just how they want to affect their players positively for the rest of their life, like how they think about this experience this very clustered, very intense experience being a catalyst and like a core memory of their lives is very interesting how they take that into account, especially when winning is so paramount. You could see a scenario easily where some like egomaniac gets completely lost in that and, you know, is win at all costs and doesn't really give a shit about the kids, but that's the opposite of what goes on. I have a couple miscellaneous things.
Sure.
The first and foremost, this had me stumped for a lot of the movie. Every time I saw it, the signed Dodgers jersey in Mizutani's house, was that a Rich Hill jersey?
It's Dodgers
44, but it can't be Rich Hill.
Well, Rich Hill pitched in Japan, so I think it was.
Oh shit. Okay, that's so. Then that leads to kind of another question. What if it's like, imagine if that's the Players Weekend D Mountain jersey?
I'm confirming whether or not Rich Hill pitched in Japan.
I know he pitched in Indie Ball, but like, what if it's what if that, like, if you just imagine, what if that's the D Mountain jersey from Players Weekend? Rich Hill, aka Dick Mountain, and it's just sitting in Mizutani's house.
I don't know why it's a Rich Hill jersey. Actually, he did not pitch in Japan. That's an interesting question. Perhaps, I don't know. Perhaps Mizutani is friendly with someone in the Dodgers. I mean, I know Kenta Maeda pitched on the Dodgers for a little while Rich Hill was there. And Kenta Maeda is no longer with the Dodgers, but I don't know. That is kind of really random. I didn't even think about that.
I'm going to go along with thinking that it's the D Mountain Players Weekend jersey and it's sitting in Mizutani's house in Japan for reasons unknown. And that makes me very happy.
I hope it is for your sake.
Thought I've had in 2020. another miscellaneous thought I had, I had a lot of sympathy for whoever does the laundry for these Japanese baseball players.
Oh my God.
Dirt infields. Yeah. And it's like the grippiest dirt.
It looks like very
on the clothes.
Yeah. It almost looks like mud or clay at times, yeah. You know, like Roland Garros where they play the French Open. It almost looks like that, like combined with what you would think of as a traditional infield dirt. But yeah, you're right. You know, Emma mentioned to us that there are, you know, because we asked, like, are there any women involved in this operation at all, or any girls involved in this operation at all? And she said, you know, there are girls high school baseball teams. They get a lot less, and there is a Koshen tournament for the girls teams, but they get a lot less attention for obvious sexist reasons. But she said that there are girls from the high schools who manage the teams, so like managers, that we are familiar with that concept here. And so I would guess that they're probably the ones who have to do all that laundry that you're mentioning, which is that's a tough beat. That's a lot of players. There's like 60 players on each team and only like however 20 makes a team or whatever.
And it's just the dirtiest uniforms you've ever seen in your life.
And they all wear white. Every team wears white too. It's all, yeah. It's either white with blue pinstripes or black pinstripes, or just all white with like a cursive font across the jersey.
It's odd that the grass infield has not really caught on in Japan, because in NPB there's I think most of the fields are dirt, even like the domed domed turf fields. I think they're still all dirt in the infield.
Perhaps they, like I, think that it's a cowardly way to play infield. You know, you get a bad divot in the grass. That's cowardly. I want the defense to have every equal opportunity to make every play. That's what I say, Kyle.
My last
as a former pitcher myself.
my last college summer ball season, are the field we played at had very thick infield grass. Like it definitely wasn't grass. It should have been on a baseball team, but it was the best field I've ever pitched on. It was fucking fantastic. I can't describe how many like definite ground ball singles got snared up in that grass and ended up fielding on the infield. It was absolutely the dream.
However, it might cut the other way. If you think about it, you could lay down a bunt that would just absolutely die in thick grass. So I don't know. Who knows?
That's true.
Maybe it's just more cost effective. You know, maybe Japan has adopted more leftist views about the necessity of lawns, which is so such an unnecessary thing that we do here. Yeah, exactly.
Just the great equalizer. The last note I had is the story of these two coaches would make for an incredible dramatic film. Sasaki and Mizutani. I think I would love to see an actual like drama be written about that.
Yeah, the only problem, and you and your listeners know this, is that it's really hard to make baseball look good in a movie, especially if you're casting kids to play.
That's true.
I don't know how good the actual baseball would look. That is one thing about this doc, is that it captures the actual playing of the baseball, and it uses archival footage of frankly, just we can just narrow it down to Ohtani. Just getting to watch Ohtani in Koshien touch 100 at 18 or 17 or however old he was when he threw that hard. First person to ever throw that hard in Koshien. I mean, that for me was one of the more exciting elements of the doc too. Just seeing someone who's now a superstar in Major League Baseball that young and that adored in his country. But yeah, you're right. A dramatic film, I would watch it. But I'm the demo, so.
I love the part of seeing Ohtani, and I thought the one, I guess, disappointment, I don't want to say disappointment because this is a Hall of Fame documentary. It's fantastic. But I thought there was going to be more footage of classical MLB players in there, like some more like Matsui and, you know, Yu Darvish or anyone like that, because they have the archival footage. They filmed this thing, and like Daisuke's output at Koshien was legendary. So
the most legendary of all time. Dude won it back to back years. How the fuck do you win this tournament back to back years? You and I just got done talking about how hard it would be to win a single elimination tournament with every high school team, even if it was just limited to Texas, but they do it for their entire country. So for him to win back-to-back years, and he lost in the championship in his third year, and he pitched every game for his high school team in all of those times.
That's how they did it. They had the best amateur pitcher in Japan, and they just rode the ever-living shit out of him to this back-to-back years. I guess,
but Ohtani is the most talented pitcher to ever come out of Japan. Like, he's touching 100. He has a ridiculous slider and sinker. Like, I don't know. You can't just ride the pitcher, I don't think, because
in Texas high school baseball, the playoffs, at least when I was in high school, the playoffs worked where you either have a 3-game series or a 1-game series, and the coaches can either agree on it, or if one wants a 3 and one wants a 1-game, they flip a coin. And if you're a coach who has an absolute horse and you win that coin flip, you can get to state just based off your guy. The thing is, when you get to state, you have to play 2 games within close proximity of each other, so your guy can't throw one of them. So that's kind of like the rub there. But Koshien is that times 100. Like, you just have to, your guy has to be on, you know, 10 consecutive times or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's still nuts though, because like, I don't know. I was one of the better pitchers like growing up on any of my teams, and then I just decided I didn't want to play baseball anymore for some stupid reason. But I would pitch every Friday. You know, we'd have like weekend series and travel ball and whatever growing up, and I'd pitch every Friday, and we would lose like 4-1, you know, because I would not be able to go the full game because of pitch limits or whatever. And I guess that's one element of this, that they don't have it. And then on Sunday, we would get hammered. So, like, I don't know. It's still, I think, unbelievably shocking. I would love to go back and see who was on any of those teams that Matsuzaka played with. It was literally just him. You know, Ohtani at least was, like, hitting for himself. Was probably hitting dingers in this.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it could have been that, like, Matsuzaka had a couple future NPB players on his team, and they just...
I know, we just don't know just about raked. It. But because they never played for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, on the subject of... like wanting a little bit more archival footage, is there anything like, what more did you want to see from this? Because I think she actually, per your interview, went to 4 schools, right?
Yeah, I think 4 or 5.
Was there anything you like in particular you wish you would have seen, besides just like in general? I could have seen 5 hours of this, like, besides just more in general, was there anything in particular that you wish you would have seen?
No, I think, I mean, I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation here, but I would have liked to dive a little bit more into like the social critical lens of what it means that like these women have to run this business by themselves. I mean, that might be like its own whole documentary, because the role of women as it pertains to baseball in Japanese society is such a hard documentary to get the green light for. You know, Emma was on our pod talking about how no one has ever done a documentary like this. No one has gone in with high school baseball teams in Japan, because the high school sports union or the high school baseball union and the media company that like oversee the broadcasting of Koshien have just never agreed to it because they didn't have to. And then I think for her to do this documentary and get permission to do the documentary and go in, like, I think it would have been hard to explore that element and still have the level of access that she had, because you have to think that it's weird for these coaches to have been coaching for 30 or 40 years or whatever, and then all of a sudden have a camera filming everything that they're doing. That would be even weird here. You know, like Hoop Dreams was revelatory because a camera finally followed kids around as they were like going through the preps to pros situation. And that this was like that, except like, I think even more access, weirdly, in a way. Like obviously Hoop Dreams is like going into their home and everything, but this is like the cameras are like right in front of these kids' faces, and there's never been any cameras on them before in this type of situation. So I don't know. That was the only thing for me that I identified from the film that I would have liked to hear more about, but
you really didn't see much media in the faces of these coaches at all. And like the cameras were on them all the time. I think if there had been media or local media or anything like that, the cameras, they would have included that in the documentary.
Sasaki even says that he, I don't know if he says this in the film or if Emma told us this, but Sasaki apparently cut back on media availability after, I guess, either Kikuchi or Ohtani. I think it was Ohtani, because they got eliminated earlier than they wanted to. And there were so many cameras in his face asking him what happened and what he was going to do. And, you know, asking him about his future and asking him about throwing 100 miles an hour. Like, and you can see in the film, he's like sobbing while camera bulbs are flashing and people are asking him a bunch of questions. I'm like, this dude is 17, man. And this film, this footage is going to live forever. And the poor kid just like went out there and left it all on the field. And now that you're like interviewing him about it, I don't know. So I think that there's been like a gradual rollback of like media access to these kids. But I mean, that's what makes this doc so good, is that it does it in such a delicate and thoughtful and inspired way.
I mean, for the reasons you just laid out, something like what I'm about to suggest is probably impossible, but this would make an incredible 6 to 8 part, just hour long episode documentary series. Cause like really, I would just love to see every aspect. Like I left it extremely satisfied, but at the same time having a zillion more questions about what life is like for every aspect. Like I would love to see a little more of a player's home life and a player's relationship with their family while they're off at the school and training hard for baseball. We didn't really get the only student we get any sort of home life glimpse at, I believe, is Mizutani's son. Am I remembering that correctly? I think that's the only one.
Yeah. Who's like taking fucking BP in the living room. I'm like, bro, you're swinging this metal bat right next to the window, my guy, right next to the TV. I was like, I don't know about all
that. Pat Burrell, living room, in the mirror, dry hacks, real ones know.
Wow, that's a deep cut. Pat the Bat. Yeah.
Pat the Bat, man. Oh.
No, I think you're right. Episodic would have been really interesting. I mean, I don't know what the audience for that looks like, but
it's you and me and Alex, and we're just watching on Netflix.
And Jake and Jordan from Baseball Barbecue. But I think that would be really interesting, because the element of when is this team going to get eliminated could be there. You could like follow them round by round through the tournament. But I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough sell. Like, I'm sure it was hard to even get what they got and to ask to like make it episodic it would have been tough.
Yeah, well, it was a really good documentary. Now I hope something like this happens for like Mexican baseball and Latin America. I just need more. I need more foreign baseball documentaries. But Bobby, our short minisode is now going on 50 minutes. thank you so much for joining me again. Tell the folks where they can find your pod, your interview with the director of this film, and what you guys have coming up.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kyle. I appreciate it. I always have fun chatting with you.
Of course.
You can find my pod by searching for Taping Pitches anywhere you hear podcasts are available, obviously on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, all of the big ones. I've gone through great pains to get us everywhere. So wherever you'd like to listen, you can listen to it. You know, we just did a season preview episode. Obviously, the baseball season is starting tomorrow. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 22nd. But our last episode, we had a bunch of really great guests on, Shakia Taylor, Hannah Kaiser, Meg Rowley, and Jake Minson, Jordan Schusterman of Cespedes Family Barbecue. And we drafted, Alex and I drafted the 10 players most likely to produce the best baseball GIFs, G-I-F, GIFs, of the 2020 baseball season. So that conversation was a lot of fun. So we do stuff like that over on Taping Pitches. And we also have, you know, as I'm sure you can tell from Kyle and I's last 50 minutes of chat, we also have, you know, more socioeconomic conversations about the game. You know, we're the only socialist baseball pod out there, Kyle.
You are. Yeah. I've looked at all the baseball pods and you are the only one.
And certainly the only one that Alex Rodriguez listens to and loves. Let's get that out there into the world.
100%. Everyone go listen to Taping Pitches. Go subscribe. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, subscribe, rate, review. You all know the drill. On Monday, we have this month's non-sports movie, talking My Cousin Vinny with my buddy Dave Ruff, who, in addition to being a great podcaster, is also an actual lawyer. So it was a great episode. Everyone tune into that. It's going to be great, Bobby. You need to tune in.
Marissa Tomei throwing harder than Shohei Ohtani did in Koshan in that film. So I hope that everybody tunes in for that for you, Kyle.
Marissa Tomei is like, I think I tweeted something about this after I did my rewatch of the movie, but if they cancel the Oscars in 2021 or if they push them back, they should just hold a ceremony where they give Marissa Tomei another Oscar for My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, she's throwing 103 with arm side movement in that film. It's absolutely amazing.
It's one of the best movie characters, like, and that's not hyperbole. It is one of the best movie characters ever. And it's boosted by this incredible Pesci performance that it is
perfectly cast film. Perfectly cast
tandem,
film.
The scene, Mona Lisa Vito's testimony in court, like that scene is just, I equated it to something like, it is basically Vinny is just throwing up, is like Chris Paul throwing up alley-oops. And Tomei is like when Blake Griffin could still jump over a car, and she's just catching every single one and flushing it with authority. It is a masterclass.
She said, Colonel Jessup who?
Just an incredible, incredible performance. Everyone listening who's still listening to this, check out on Monday, My Cousin Vinny, me and Dave Ruff. It's a good episode. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you then. We'll